Laudato Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Tuesday, September 27th, Cardinal Parolin warns against the danger of nuclear arms, Ukraine's educational crisis reaches new heights, and the human rights situation in Nigeria faces all-time lows. In the Vatican, I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov. The Vatican Secretary of State has reiterated the Holy See's stance on nuclear weapons, that upholding the belief that it is a moral imperative to eliminate nuclear weapons, and he has called on all parties to respond to the current nuclear threat with a collective and concerted response. Cardinal Parolin's appeal came during a speech at a UN high-level meeting to commemorate the International Day for the Total Elimination of Nuclear Weapons. Linda Berdoni reports.
As long as nuclear weapons exist, we cannot rule out the possibility of their use, which threatens any possible future for our common home, as well as humankind's very existence. Cardinal Pietro Parolin was quoting Pope Francis as he addressed a top-level UN meeting in New York. And grounding his speech in the current scenario of war in Europe, the Cardinal decried the fact that the situation has triggered what he called the repugnant threat of the use of nuclear weapons, illustrating just how close the world has come to the abyss of nuclear war. Parolin recalled the 10th review conference of the parties to the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons that took place in August, decrying the fact that the actions of nuclear weapon states leave us far from achieving this goal. Through the modernization and expansion of nuclear arsenals, he said, these states are increasing their reliance on nuclear deterrence rather than meeting their disarmament obligations under Article 6 of the NPT. He said that the Holy See hopes that irrespective of their positions on the Non-Proliferation Treaty, states with nuclear weapons will contribute to assistance for victims and environmental remediation. He then issued a powerful appeal to pursue the path leading to the total elimination of nuclear weapons, something he said that requires a response that is collective and concerted, based on mutual trust, and considers the catastrophic humanitarian and environmental consequences of nuclear use. I'm Linda Bordoni.
Turning to world news, there is grave concern surrounding the human rights situation in Nigeria. Addressing the 51st meeting of the UN Human Rights Council on the 26th of September, the International Catholic Migration Commission stressed that the global community can no longer stand as disinterested bystanders while Nigerians tragically lose their lives and property and are displaced by violence in many areas of the country. The organization stressed that we echo the recent appeal of the Catholic bishops of Nigeria decrying the worsening state of insecurity in our nation, as well as activities of terrorists and insurgents, kidnappers and bandits. Attacks on travelers and worshippers in churches and other places of worship have become too frequent. We continue to call on civil authorities to stand up to their constitutional responsibility of safeguarding the lives and property of Nigerians. The Secretary of the International Catholic Migration Commission, Monsignor Bob Vitillo, spoke to Vatican Radio about Nigeria being an area of concern.
A place that is very much in my mind right now is Nigeria, where in northeast Nigeria, but also in other parts of Nigeria as well, there's religious extremist violence going on. And a lot of it isn't really religious because it's a false manipulation of religion that these extremists bring. And in fact, I've been participating with many of the bishops and other diocesan officials from those dioceses in Nigeria that are most heavily affected. We also have the Dennis Hurley Institute from South Africa that's following this and looking at the human rights abuses very carefully in that area of Nigeria. We are also in contact with Caritas Nigeria and ICMC, in addition to the support they're receiving from the Caritas Network. Also, ICMC will help them with some first response aid to the dioceses that are affected, because more than a million people in Nigeria have been displaced, internally displaced to other parts of the country.
Also continuing to make headlines are the events in Iran. The Iranian government has accused the United States of using unrest triggered by the death of a woman in police custody to try to destabilize the Islamic Republic. Nathan Morley reports.
The wave of demonstrations sweeping the country have been the largest in Iran since 2019. As it currently stands, they show no sign of abating. Women have played a leading role in the protests, waving and setting light to their veils. At least 70 people have been killed, with that number expected to rise in the coming days. The protests first erupted back on the 16th of September, after the death of a 22-year-old Kurdish woman who was being held in police detention. Since then, demonstrations have spread across cities, towns and villages in the country. It's reported that as many as 1,200 demonstrators have been arrested by security forces. The instability comes as anti-government protests spilled online, with videos of women burning their hijabs being shared globally. The anger centres on the fate of Mahsa Amini, who was arrested for supposedly wearing a hijab headscarf in what police described as an improper fashion. Campaigners say she suffered a deadly blow to the head. It's a claim denied by state officials. However, police argue that she died of natural causes, but her family believe she was exposed to beating and torture. Her death and arrest came amid a government clampdown on women's rights. Just last month, Iran's hardline president signed a ruling which expanded penalties for women posting anti-hijab content to the internet. The unrest in Iran has spilled over internationally as well. Over the weekend, police clashed with demonstrators trying to reach Iran's embassies in London and Paris. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
Elsewhere, calls are increasing for the resignation of Haiti's prime minister as the country descends into disorder and chaos. James Blears reports.
The true depth of Haiti's SOS disaster starkly being brought into focus and brought home by UN envoy to Haiti, Helen Lalime. Things went from bad to worse after the government ended fuel subsidies on September the 11th. This was the last straw for the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere. Gasoline and diesel prices rocketed, producing a collapsing domino effect for the rest of the economy. Food shortages, shops and businesses closed, and public transportation no longer exists in towns and cities which are plagued by organized crime. Helen Lalime advised the UN Security Council that gangs warring amongst themselves have attacked and looted warehouses, stealing food intended for almost 250,000 of Haiti's most vulnerable population, which faces starvation. As things stand right now, almost 40% of Haitians rely and depend upon food donated by the international community. Gang violence, especially in the capital Port-au-Prince and other major cities, is endemic. But Haitian authorities are somehow claiming law and order is under control while appealing for substantial funding to combat crime. In reality, the precarious balance was shattered by the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse in July 2021. Neighbouring nation, the Dominican Republic, which shares the island of Hispaniola, is building a border wall to isolate itself from a nation in anguish, which is crying out for help from the rest of the world. For Vatican Radio, James Beers reporting.
Turning to the war in Ukraine, Ina Sovsun, a member of Ukraine's parliament and former First Deputy Minister of Education and Science, has spoken about her country's education crisis on the sidelines of an international conference on educating refugees hosted in Rome at the Pontifical Gregorian University. She said the degradation of education and a brain drain are the latest tragedies in Ukraine as the country continues to be battered by war as Russia's invasion continues. However, she says these issues can be mitigated if forces join together to guarantee safety and adequate bomb shelters in the war-torn country. She spoke to Vatican News' Svetlana Dugovic.
I think that the most important message is this. Ukrainian education did suffer a lot. It suffered because of the direct damage to the buildings. But what is even more important, it suffered a lot because of the brain drain of kids leaving the country and potentially not coming back, of teachers leaving, university professors leaving and finding jobs abroad. And I think it is crucially important right now to join forces to make sure that all those kids, all those students, all those teachers, professors, that they come back. In order for that to happen, the basic requirement is safety. For those who are in schools, in colleges, in universities. And I think my primary direct message, or even a request, if I may, to our international audience would be this. Please help Ukraine build shelters, bomb shelters in our schools. It's a huge undertaking. Ukrainian economy cannot support this huge undertaking. So we have 13,000 schools. Only half of them have some very basic shelters as of right now. So I think right now it's crucially important to have those bomb shelters, because if there are bomb shelters, parents would be willing to come back. Their kids would be going to school offline, not continuing for the 4 years to study online. And I think that this is a very primary and basic requirement if you want to help Ukrainian education to go through this extremely difficult period.
And as you likely noticed there went an air raid siren in the background as Ina Sovsun, a member of Ukraine's parliament, speaks there to Svetlana Dukovic. The bishops of Canada have written a letter to Pope Francis to thank him for his recent apostolic visit to their country. The letter was released on Monday at the opening of the year's plenary assembly in Cornwall, Ontario, focusing on the healing and reconciliation process with the Indigenous people of Canada and on the synodal process. The gathering, which runs until the 29th of September, brings together 72 bishops for in-person meetings for the first time since 2019. Lisa Zingarini reports.
As they opened their annual plenary assembly in Cornwall on Monday, the Canadian bishops have heartfully thanked Pope Francis for his recent apostolic visit to Canada, saying it has left a profound and lasting mark on the country, the Indigenous people, and the local and universal church. The Pope travelled to Canada on a penitential pilgrimage of healing and reconciliation with Indigenous peoples from the 24th to the 30th of July. The apostolic visit followed the meeting he held in springtime in the Vatican with representatives of the First Nations, Métis and Inuit people, who shared their stories of pain and trauma experienced by both former students of residential schools and their descendants. In their letter, the Canadian bishops remarked that Pope Francis' presence and his words of healing and humanity have helped all to take significant steps forward towards a more hopeful future. They added that the apostolic visit has further reinforced their common resolve to spare no effort to strengthen their relationship with Indigenous peoples of Canada through mutual respect, greater trust, and sincere friendship. The 4-day General Assembly will focus primarily on discussing and discerning the next steps forward in the path of healing and reconciliation, inspired both by Pope Francis' apostolic visit as well as by the earnest dialogue which bishops have endeavoured to build with Indigenous peoples in the past 5 years. I am Lisa Zingarini.
Returning to papal news, Pope Francis has penned the introduction of Andrea Tornielli's book, The Life of Jesus. The book, written by the editorial director of the Vatican's Dicastery for Communications, hits the shelves in Italy today, the 27th of September. It tells the story of Christ, and woven into the story are comments by Pope Francis. That brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. To follow Pope Francis's news daily, please go to our web portal at www.vaticannews.va or follow our Facebook and Twitter feed. Many thanks to our sound engineers in the studio in the Vatican. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.